Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
Hello and welcome to DW Entertainment. I'm your entertainment reporter, Megan Basham, and we're here talking Terror on the Prairie, Daily Wire's new big Western movie. And I've got with me producer and star Gina Carano, producer Jeremy Boring, producer and God King Jeremy Boring, director Michael Polish, and Bonfire Legends Amanda Presmick and Dallas Sanye. Hey, guys.
I want to know, is that Bonfire Legends with or without an apostrophe?
Is it with or without?
I feel like it's without.
It's without.
Yeah, they're the legends.
Yeah.
So, Gina, let's start with you. You know, I was kind of listening through some of the material, some of the interviews that we did on the set a few months ago, way back in November. And one of the things that you talked about was that crucial 36 hours between when you were canceled from Mandalorian and making this deal with the Daily Wire. What I heard was that it was now or never. We either had to do it immediately or you were going to miss the moment. Can you tell me a little bit, like, what was that like from your end?
It was one of the hardest moments, I feel, because I just wanted to crawl in bed and put the covers over my head for a month. And just, I didn't know when it happened. I was just, I was so upset that I just felt like, oh yeah, it's over. It's over. And so I crawled into bed, and then I have everybody texting me, and my manager, Scott Karp, was like, you know, you need to get on the phone. You need to get on the phone with Ben Shapiro. He's got something for you. And from a broken heart, you know, and you're just kind of like, I don't want to talk to anybody, but okay, let's just get on the phone. And when I got on the phone with Ben, it was just forgiveness. It was just like a lot of healing. It was like, we're going to give you an opportunity. And I was like, okay, let's do this. And it was very emotional, to be honest. It was hard. Because, you know, I also had lost my hearing almost completely. Like, as soon as the cancellation happened, my hearing left. And so I was, like, straining to hear everything that Ben was saying. And he just said, you got to fight back. You have to punch back. And I was like, okay, that's something I can do. So let's go. And just heartbroken, really, but with a little diamond of hope in there from that phone call.
Was there any sense that you're crossing a Rubicon in that moment? Like, once you've done that, the world knows who you are.
Well, I think the world knew who I was.
They knew who you as an actress, but now as someone who's willing to sort of come out and fight in that way.
I've been fighting my whole life, so I don't, if anybody's been paying attention to me, they know I don't really hide anything. So that wasn't really the concern. The concern was just I needed to heal in order to, like, be public again. So I was heartbroken, and, like, The Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro, and Jeremy gave me, like, this hope.
Yeah.
This little tinge of hope. And I was like, okay, I'll hold on to that.
What was it like from your end, Jeremy?
Well, Ben called me first and said, you know, I think that what's happening here is obviously wrong, which we agreed about. And he said, but I think this is an opportunity for us to step up and make a real statement that we're not going to tolerate this kind of behavior in the culture anymore. You know, nobody's really fought back in the way that Ben was proposing at that time. And I was all in instantly. You know, as soon as he made the case, I thought, yeah, that's right. Gina literally did absolutely nothing wrong. She spoke a political opinion. And in fact, the position that she took was fairly conciliatory. It was the opposite of what people, tried to accuse her of. And so it made it, you know, they say, you know, bad case makes bad law, or whatever that old expression is. You need someone who you can actually make a good stand behind if you're going to do something like this. You know, it'd be great to make a movie with Johnny Depp. We'd love to make a Johnny Depp. But if the first person you go to is someone who does have a little bit of dirt on their hands, it makes it a lot harder to make your point. I think, you know, it's terrible. I think, you know, almost no one can really imagine being in Gina's shoes and having you know, people take basically every facet of your life away from you. They take your career away from you, your income away from you. They take your standing away from you, your good name away from you, all in this sort of one moment. And so what was important to us in that 36 hours was to pull her out of that place that she was, to pull her out of crawling into bed, which is where any of us would be, and say it really is kind of a now or never. You know, if we try to make a stand a year from now, all the energy will mm-hmm. be out of this moment. So as I say, once Ben made the case, I just thought, how do we actually communicate with someone who's going through one of the worst things that can happen in a society like ours, which is to lose your name? And fortunately, she was game.
Well, also, you think about when they do this, the amazing amount of talent you're walking away from. Yeah. You've got a huge popular star, huge amount of talent. And I mean, that is a big opportunity just, you know, on a commercial level for the Daily Wire.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it just goes to show the power that they have, that the left has in the culture right now. They don't need any individual talented person or any individual brand equity or name equity that they've built up. They can burn any individual down because they have everyone else. But again, I think if you stand up to them just a little bit, and we're seeing it already, you know, the Daily Wire made a big stand against Disney on kids' content around transgenderism recently. And I wouldn't say that the only thing that happened was Daily Wire's stand, but certainly one of the most prominent things that happened was Daily Wire's stand. And within 10 days, you see Netflix backing off of some of their more extreme positions. It's not that we somehow defeated them or dealt them some financial death blow by any means, but what we did say is, if you take for granted 50% of the country, someone will compete against you and you could lose that market share. And just that is enough, I think, to create some change. I think what Gina has done in making this film, and listen, we'll get to it in a moment, but the fact that the film is fantastic doesn't hurt. But I think that by making the stand at all, it creates a lot of back pressure, and over time it'll create a lot of change.
Okay, so let's talk about this film then. So we got Gina, we know we want a movie with her. How did you pick this as the movie?
Oh, wow.
I got started right away after we closed the deal. And, you know, it's tough because you're reaching out to agents and managers, screenwriters and people like that who are very hesitant about getting involved in something like this. And so it was really a hunt to find the right script. And we went through several iterations, many of them, in fact.
Wasn't White Knuckle one of those? I remember. I wrote an article about that.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, at one point in time, we had another script chosen. It became a real problem, though, because the guilds in Hollywood were requiring certain levels of COVID testing and potential vaccine mandates, and also just the amount of rules that they impose on a production. It's very anti-artist. Yeah. And so we decided to leave. Well, Gina led the charge and said, very clearly, I'm not going to do any of that stuff. And
that was
we said,
I would consider that my first producer's decision. And I'm looking at these guys.
You made it count.
Yeah. I was like, well, and I appreciate the responsibility because I had moved out of California into an RV and I'm headed across the country to Tennessee and I'm excited and I'm thinking, okay, here we go. It's going to be, you know, I'm out of California, I'm out of the business. And then we show up and, you know, there was a very real possibility that the SAG-AFTRA was going to mandate the vaccine. And we had to weigh the decision of, well, what happens if we're halfway through filming and they come in and they say, you know, you have to shut down and walk away or you all have to get vaccinated. And so we discussed it and we weren't willing to risk that, obviously. So we transitioned. They asked me, Jeremy and Dallas and everybody and Amanda, they're like, what do you want to do? And I just said I wasn't comfortable with forcing that on anybody. You know, at the time I was like, okay, we can, you know, if we have to, we can mask just to stay SAG because it's so important. I was like, okay, we can, maneuver around the, you know, the testing and the mask. We can possibly do that. But I just was not okay with forcing, injecting people with something they don't believe in. And that was the defining moment where I was like, okay, so do I get back in my RV and go away now? And it wasn't that. They said, you know, we all took a big, deep breath And, you know, the weight of not being, not going SAG or AFTRA was really heavy in the room. And then they let it go. Then it was just, okay, we're going to transition. We're going to move up to Montana. And we're, that's what's so great about this group. You run into so many crazy things you wouldn't ever think that you run into. And it's like, ooh, that sucked. Okay, let's take a moment. And we'll now, and as soon as you just turn your focus and you just start marching that way, it's just like the seas part. And you just, you know that that was the decision you were supposed to make. And I believe that this movie was, this is what we were supposed to make.
I mean, thematically, it's right on target for who Gina is. This is women taking a stand. That's kind of also been Bonfire Legend, at least in its partnership with Daily Wire, kind of a running theme.
Yeah, you know, I think we talk a lot, and people have pointed out, you know, several of our movies in a row have had a strong female lead, right? A woman in charge or becoming the heroine of the situation or protecting, you know, her family, her children. And the only reason for that is these were the best scripts. It just so happens, you know, that these movies that we fell in love with had strong female leads. And, you know, obviously the opportunity to showcase Gina not only as an action star and, you know, a badass, which I think everybody right. knows that she is, this role for Hattie, for her, was so grounded in motherhood, so grounded in, you know, just a raw, powerful question of, you know, what do you do when you have to protect your kids against evil, you know? And so Gina got to kind of play with all of those things at once, and it was amazing to watch her do that and hold a baby on set while, absolutely. You know, firing a gun.
I'm never having babies, so now. A big you want birth control, just, you know, go ahead and film with a baby.
A big part when you're reading 300 scripts and you're trying to, you know, find the perfect vehicle for her, you know, that's one half of the battle. But then we needed to find the perfect director. And it was really, really important to me that the director understand actresses. Right. And so I had a relationship with Michael for many years and trusted him. And so he, in fact, followed us from project to project because we just knew he was going to be the right fit.
Yeah, I'm a disciple.
Well, I mean, what was it like for you, Michael, working with Gina, working with Cowboy? How did you bring this picture together to go, OK, this is, we know how much is riding on this as the sort of big first movie with Gina Carano?
Well, you know, once we got to Montana, I felt that we were on my home ground. But, you know, having Gina be first part, being so talented, but the athletic, she's so athletic. And I understood how she was going to approach something. And it's very paint by numbers. But then there's a very emotional side that we were able to bring with her. Because, you know, this is a Clint Eastwood role. This is, I'm going to take over. And to get her in a very grounded position where she's like, this is my family, this is what we're going to do. And going by the rules of a Western, but by female tactics, and that was really interesting to watch her. And it was nice to see it in Montana.
Well, and I really liked how it focused on sort of the mama bear aspect of it, which it does make it rough with motherhood. You go, wow, you know how much was riding on these women, and you don't think about that much in Westerns. This brought a different element to that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have children, but. I really felt with those babies, there was two different babies we used, and with the babies on set, I just felt so protective over them. And, you know, I newly have, like, in the last couple of years, three nieces. And it's just, it really, you know, it sparked, like, some sort of cool thing in me that I didn't, you know, like, my little sister's like, you never know until you have them. And it's like, I got to experience dipping my feet into that a little bit, and then giving the baby back at the end of the day. That was the best part.
That's nice.
Yeah. You know, I think that the film is somewhat autobiographical. You know, it really is about what do you do when male actors come who want to take away everything that matters to you. And of course, that's what had just happened to Gina. You know, with Shut In, we had this opportunity to make a story that really was about motherhood and about, you know, a young woman who was technically a mother, but only technically, becoming what she needed to be. And Tara does take a different view, which is that in Tara, Gina is both spiritually and emotionally broken at the beginning of the film. The character of Hattie this is what the Western does so well. It takes the vast sort of Western expanse and makes of that a character. And that character is one that's constantly trying to destroy you. If there was no captain, if there were no, you know, black hats who came along, who came riding up, Montana is trying to kill
right.
these characters, right? And is trying to break them. You know, this movie is very quiet. That sort of vast, silent expanse is claustrophobic and trying to break you down. So unlike Shut In, which is just about motherhood, I think Terror really is about the besieged individual.
Mm.
And while motherhood brings this great color to it, something else that you almost never see, a woman defending her husband, not by, you know, physically hand-to-hand combat beating up bad guys, but almost on a spiritual level, you know, Hattie becomes a wife in this film in the same way that Rainey Qualley's character became a mother in Shut In. But at the end of the day, I think the movie is really about Gina making a stand against the culture who's you know, ridden out of nowhere to come take away everything that she cares about. And when you see her performance in the film, you see that it's personal.
Yeah, you can really, I was surprised when I watched it. I thought, wow, like, I don't know if everybody else can see it, but I can see the pain on me, which was, it was like a therapeutic experience. I was allowed to just wear it. Because if I had a different role in a different movie, I might have had to, hide it a little bit more. Mm. But with this one, I was allowed to just wear it in silence, which is exactly what I was doing, for this last year or two. So I feel like it's a great film for everybody to kind of relate to as well. You know, families are fighting for each other right now, and it's not going to be easy, and it's probably going to get a lot tougher. So maybe that quiet movie can be a breath of fresh air. It feels very pure. It's like a breath of fresh air in all the madness.
It absolutely is. You know, and Michael, how do you bring that out?
Just to piggyback on Jeremy, without all these elements, and Amanda made a quote the other day to me, she goes, it would just be Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
You know, and so you have to bring in all the stuff that the baggage that was going on in the world, and we put it right in this film.
You know, there was something too we've talked about this before, Dallas, but as I was driving out to the set, it was sort of stunning to me to see Montana, yeah. to see just this sense of the American West, and there's an iconic thing here in the Western. What was that like for all of you going, okay, we're gonna make a Western, and there's something about this that speaks to an American moment?
There's a lot of patience that you have to have when you go up to that territory. And it takes producers like these to say, look, this is what we got, this is how we're gonna deal with it. And that's what Montana delivers. And the minute you fight that, the minute you gotta pack up and go, because it's gonna give you different things that it's gonna be rain, there's gonna be wind, there's gonna be animals, there's gonna be accidents, there's gonna be a lot of drinking too.
How did you guys work with the snowstorm? So I know that when you first started shooting, right, that was something that was just a major issue right out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, Michael had warned us, as he said, you know, he said, trust me. We should do this in Montana. And we all said, okay. But he was like, you got to know that you're going to be fighting it all the time. And we said, okay. And I was like, it's October. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
That's Amanda. It'll be fine.
One. Yeah. Everybody, you know, we're all going to bed the night before and looking at the weather going, oh no. And we wake up and it was 3 feet of snow. I mean, and it didn't yeah. stop for 3 days. And so we walk on set and luckily, and by design as well, a lot of the film was shot in chronological order because we do so much destruction to the homestead. So we designed a lot of the schedule to be in order. So at least in that moment on day one, we went, okay, let's figure out how to work this in. And in fact, it's scripted that it is a snowy prairie. So that was a miracle in many ways. But we said, okay, we know that this is going to disappear in 3 days. This isn't going to last. And so how do we work that into the story? And so we had to juggle some filming, you know, jump inside the cabin when we were supposed to be outside so that we could, you know, transition the weather appropriately in the story. And, you know, tough moment on set, you know, figuring out what the move was, but
can you imagine the movie now?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It just all art is about overcoming constraints,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The film, to me, those snowy vistas at the beginning make the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I just remember seeing Dallas 7 in the morning. We both looked. This is epic. We're the only people. Yeah. Like, we're sitting by ourselves. We're in, you know, clothes, and this is epic. Probably only two people. Everybody's scrambling around like, wow. The smile on his face, like, this is going to look like we've been here for a year.
This man right here with his devious little smile, he's like, okay, this is what we're going to do today. We're like, oh, gosh.
God was working with you in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because when I was walking around the set talking to people, I heard all of these stories from crew guys, stunt guys, everyone saying, I really wanted to be a part of a Daily Wire movie. And we're talking about guys with Academy Awards, guys with 41-year, you know, histories in Hollywood, sending you their resumes. Were you kind of flooded with people going, we actually really want to be a part of this?
It all started with Gina and the Daily Wire's willingness to dive right in. I'm very proud of the work we did right off the bat to get that deal done. And it became a charge, right? And people could really get behind it. It became a calling from a lot of folks on this crew. And so, yes, when we went to Montana and when we were making a Western and we had Gina Carano and it was missional with the Daily Wire, you start to have a perfect storm. And so the crew came together and everyone made a lot of best friends. In fact, when we wrapped, it was hard because we had to return to normal life. Mm. And we had really, you know, for those, you know, 8 to 12 weeks, depending on how long the person was there, you know, they became part of the family.
You know, you probably have to be a little careful when you're casting your family in a way and picking who's going to play alongside Gina. What was that process like?
Oh, this is fun.
The misfits show up.
we got all the right misfits on the cast and the crew. We just got everybody. I don't know. I had a lot of faith in my heart that I knew that somehow when you make the right decision and you get confirmation, like, yes, this is where this is the direction we're supposed to be going. We're supposed to be going to Montana. And you feel the confidence behind making those tough decisions, but then being rewarded of like, okay, I don't think God's bringing me this far to come this far. So he's going to, you know, walk me through the next one. And that's how I kind of knew the casting was going to be okay. It's like the right people are going to want to be attracted to working with us. The right people are going to, you know, want to be attracted to these roles. And we're going to end up with who is supposed to be here.
Yeah, Gina's a pain in the ass. You know, she she walks in the office one day and says, you know, I'm not willing to make the movie that we just all agreed that we were making and spend a bunch of money on because of the vaccine mandates. And you think, she's right, but man, this sucks. And then you think, well, okay, we got to pivot. We got to make this kind of movie and this kind of movie. And here's who we should get cast-wise to really make that make sense. And Gina's like, no, I don't want any big names in it. I don't want anyone who isn't willing to be 100% bought in to the vision. And, you know, if the only two decisions that Gina made as a producer were those two, they would be the most consequential two decisions made in the film. And that's not, I mean, obviously she made many other decisions along the way, but she really, her vision for not just what this film meant in terms of making a stand against Hollywood by existing at all, by the uncanceling of Gina, but what it was going to mean as a production, that the production itself was going to be a rebuke of the entire, you know, sort of authoritarian moment in which we were living at that moment in history. I really think everything that people will experience when they watch the film is born out of those two very strong decisions that Gina made. And this cast came into existence because of that. We didn't go to the normal places you would go to try to cast a great period Western.
Well, let's talk about kind of our two main other feature players in this, which would be Cowboy and Nick Searcy. Hmm. So how did you land on them? Because those performances were amazing.
Well, reluctantly with Nick. I make it a point never to use Nick unless you absolutely have to. But literally when everyone else had passed, I was open to the idea that maybe, just maybe.
And I was completely opposite. I saw Nick and I was like, that's him. I was like, I respect him so much as an actor. I don't care what his politics are. I don't care how abrasive he might seem online. I kind of actually love that about him. And I was like, that's our captain. I don't think we need to look any further. And these guys were like, oh, a little bit. I'm like, no, that's him.
Nick gives Nick is a fine actor. And he gives, I think, the best performance he's ever given.
It's incredible.
In this film.
Yeah, it's really operatic. And it's really nice. And he's just, you know, you watch it, and we were in the editing room together, and you don't know exactly what's happening. When you string it together, you go, there's the symphony, there's the song.
What do you want? Vengeance.
And I was on set when Nick was standing outside of the log cabin and screaming, you know, God's coming to get you or something. I can't remember what the line was, but it was, I actually was talking to Dallas at the time and I couldn't pay attention to him. I'm like, I got chills. And I'm like, no, I need to pay attention to Nick Searcy now. Those were just some really powerful scenes. I mean, when you guys, were you surprised that it came together that way, that you got these sort of iconic Western moments?
Well, Dallas was made to make Westerns. I think we all.
His name.
Dallas.
So I do think when you watch the film, it is of a kind with all the greatest Westerns, and that is Dallas. I mean, you know, you've got, Michael brought this unbelievable aesthetic sensibility to the film. There's, you know, these amazing shots of Montana. I mean, it's a love story about Montana in a way, even though Montana, I think, is one of the villains of the film. But because Michael has lived there, because he's immersed in it and loves it, that really comes through visually. I don't want to give away too much about the film, but there's a sequence in the cabin that's, and I don't know how long it is, an 8-minute Steadicam shot or something, that just creates this sort of frenetic tension that you couldn't have accomplished without Michael. But I think what you couldn't have accomplished without Dallas is exactly what you're saying. It's this sense of what makes a Western. And so that's one of the few things I wasn't surprised about. I knew if we send Dallas to make a Western, he is going to bring us those great Western moments. And I love to talk crap about Nick Searcy, and he's earned it. But Nick is...
He'll get his turn in a little bit.
Yeah, I'll be there for that.
Nick is truly a fantastic actor. And when Dallas called and said, what would you think about going out to Nick with this role? I said, you know, my concern isn't that Nick isn't good enough for the role. My concern is that Nick may be too good for the role. And what I mean by that is, when you hire someone who's incredibly talented to be in a small film, that they sometimes feel like they're slumming and pride won't allow them to give their best. And there's another layer to that, which is when you ask a friend to be in your film at all, they often feel like they're doing a favor and pride won't allow them to bring their very best. And in this case, 1.5 of those things were true. We were asking Nick to overcome 1.5 of those things.
Yeah. And he was truly slumming.
Yeah. So I called Nick and said, hey, you know, I know how great you can be at this, but please don't do it unless you're going to be that great. Like, if Nick Searcy is going to be in this movie, Nick Searcy has to show up, which is a challenge for any actor in a situation like the one that we put him in. And he, damn it, I'm loathe to say it, but he just delivered. He just came through.
Show up.
Yeah, he showed up.
And so when I'm thinking about my husband, we're going through all the, we're going through all the casting and the videos that people were, the auditions. And we went through so many names, and I had been watching Cowboy forever. And I think I have a really good eye for this. Like, he attracts the camera. Like, he sparkles on film. You just want to, you're so curious about this person. He's not over rehearsed. He's like very authentic and genuine. And at the same time, he's so vulnerable. And obviously, like, he came, he's obviously a cowboy. I mean, he was fixing everybody's RV.
The name is there and everything.
He really is this guy and the nature. And like, he really, I think that was just the perfect casting was Cowboy. And I think we're going to see him in a lot more.
It's a very small moment, but the moment where you're filling his coffee in the cabin, he's trying to get to work.
It's my favorite
acting moment in the film.
Yeah.
It's so odd and unique. And
yeah.
Mine was when he takes the gun from you.
Yeah.
And I just went, that is so something my husband would do. And go, give me that. What are you doing?
I know.
My favorite part of Cowboy when he brought us all coffee.
Oh, yeah.
He started bringing us coffee every morning, remember?
Yeah.
He would come to set when he wasn't called just because we're in Montana and, you know, it was a family, and he would come and he would help fix the broken RV and he would help, you know, move the thing or help someone, you know, with the
roping,
horse practice, roping. I remember when I first reached out to all of our cast and you're like, okay, hi, like, I'm Amanda. Do you have horse experience? You know, do you have gun experience? Because you're assessing what we need to do to train everyone. And Cowboy was like, yeah, I have experience. And then I like Google it and I'm like, oh, okay, sure.
In all the things, all the Western things.
Yeah, he's good.
Well, I think what a lot of people are probably going to ask me as the entertainment reporter, I get a lot of emails about, well, what's Daily Wire doing next? And so what is the next plan for a partnership with Gina Carano, with Michael Polish? What do we have next on the docket?
I think they fired me, so I'm canceled.
What we're trying to do is incredibly ambitious, right? We're trying to, with a fraction of the resources of a small studio, make a platform that can compete. What we have going for us is that every dollar right now that the mainstream of Hollywood spends is basically just marketing for us. They're going all in telling the audience that they don't want them. And so it's helpful that they're as tone deaf as they are. But it's a challenge. And it's a challenge to say, you know, what exact next thing can we do with our exact pals in this exact moment? You know, as Dallas and Amanda both alluded to, I'm almost certain we read through 300 scripts. I didn't. I say we, so that I can in some way share in Dallas's suffering. 300 scripts to find this, because finding any piece of great art, incredibly difficult. Add a single fixed point that has to speak to the values of Daily Wire. Well, now you've canceled out, you know, 90% of what's produced, because even down to the script, because if those scripts were being made, there'd be no reason for us to exist. So almost no script you read that's at that level of quality actually has the values that we want to communicate. Now add a second fixed point for Gina Carano. It could be for any, for X. Well, now you've canceled out another 50% of anything that you're just getting down to a smaller and smaller pool of things that are possible to make. And so what I would say is, on a very practical level, we're trying to find what are the best projects that we can bring to the audience in a timely, given all the constraints that exist. The added constraints, how do we do it and continue to work with our pals and invest in our pals? Well, that too. Is this the last time the Daily Wire is going to do a project with Gina Carano? I haven't asked her, but I hope not. Is this the last time we're going to do a project with Michael Polish? I certainly hope not. When? As soon as we identify what that next terrific piece of IP is that we can all work together on. And to that end, we're getting more and more aggressive. You know, when we went to find this project, we're having to read what was being submitted to us. We've since cultivated a lot of relationships with writers. We have a lot of things being developed actively. But what we can't miss. We have to make a great product every time. Because I know what people expect when they say the Daily Wire is going to make a movie. I know what they think they're going to get. And I know if they give Terror on the Prairie a chance, I know how blown away they're going to be, how all of their expectations are going to be absolutely shattered. I know that if they sit down and watch Shut In, all of their expectations will be shattered. If they watch Run, Hide, Fight, all of their expectations will be shattered. What we cannot afford to do is stop doing that. And so we're all working together to identify what those great pieces of content will be. If the great content that we find is one that the Venn diagram works for it to be, the people sitting here right now, I think, Nick's not here, so I can boldly say that we would all love it.
Without Nick Searcy.
But I think, like, also, I think it's inspiring. What this movie is to me is it's a start.
That's right.
Mm. It's a start to, it's giving people that little diamond of hope that I got. It's going to give other creators and artists and directors and, you know, like everybody else, just get busy, start creating. You never know if your movie is going to be the next one as actors. I mean, they obviously can't do Gina Carano movies all the time. You know, they want to diversify and do a lot of stuff. But that doesn't stop me from, you know, putting my next goal out there. Like, okay, my biggest dream is to direct. And so maybe, you know, if Michael Polish does, I'll go shadow him for, you know, or something. You know, you just have to individually and as a group know that we had such an incredible time making this movie. We support each other. Keep your eyes open, and we're just going to keep attracting more and more artists that you know, maybe those positions change, you know, like maybe instead of being the star, then you turn into like, you know, shadowing Michael for a movie, or, you know, I'm just, the world is our oyster right now.
Yeah,
and we couldn't be with a better group. So, yeah.
Well, I don't think we can end on a better moment than that. So thank you guys, and thank all of you for watching. You now need to go to dailywire.com/subscribe and sign up to see Terror on the Prairie, to see all of this great content that Daily Wire is putting out, and to join the fight to create some new entertainment and some competition for Hollywood. Thanks so much.